WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
Happy Monday. I see that we're back again. 12-9-24. Call in number 888-329-3306. You're listening to Life is a Gamble. And folks say, well, Prince, your host, Melvin Prince Jonathan. Prince, why'd you name the show Life is a Gamble? Well, at the time, you know, being a Republican in Philadelphia, growing up in a Democratic town, you know, you were kind of risking some things being a Republican. But I think over the years, folks have learned that good politics is good politics. And so sometimes the Democrats are learning, sometimes you win some, sometimes you lose some. This happened this past election, they lost a few things. But look, they still hold all the cards. They're still in position. They still have the majority of folks who vote Democrat in this city right here, and it's not changing much anytime soon. One of the things we did during this election was not to change Philly from blue to red. That's probably never going to happen, or at least not the next 20 years, but we're trying to convince the folks who are blue to not always vote blue, vote some red, and vote the people who help you get the job done. Do not vote folks just because they've been in office forever, you know, and if you can't tell me anything someone's done, then definitely don't vote them back in. So I'm wrestling with a few things. Somehow every Monday I got more issues and problems than I do progress. And so I come on this radio station because there's another radio station and calls itself the only black radio station. And yet nobody holds them accountable. You know, if they lying to you, then you're accepting it. If they're saying things that's not true, if they're not asking the right question, you're accepting that. If they're bringing you hosts from outside of the city or outside of the state, you are accepting that. In fact, some of the hosts they bring you, you can't even ask them a question. The people who co-host with the host, you can't even ask them a question because the host asks them all the questions as if they represent you. And you've allowed that. And last week we had a... all week I was listening to folks talk about the show about the seniors when I told the seniors that over the age of 65, 70, 75, and 80, the young people have lost the respect for you. And I meant that. I'm not telling you anything that's a surprise. I'm telling you what is reality. Because you haven't explained why you have let so much happen to you. Why you still let them produce shows like The Help, or other shows that show you in 12 Years a Slave or Django. Why do you even let them do that? Like, oh, because they got black actors? You know, that's ridiculous. Anytime you watch something that reduces who you are, that reduces the fact that you are prominent, that you are built very well, that you can accomplish a lot, and let them reduce you. One of the shows that was a delight of mine is Something the Lord Has Made with Mos Def. Love that show. One of the best show. You know, Lean On Me. Love that show. One of the best show. And so I have a few things this Monday I'd like to talk about. 12-9. We're 9 days in to December. And it's going to get rough. I don't know if it's going to get colder, but I know it's going to get rough because this, of all times, is a time where folks do not have enough money. They might be spending money, but they do not have enough money. And so I'm predicting from December the 20th to the 25th that it's going to be a lot more crimes. People are going to be robbing people. People are going to be taking from people. You know, it's already in the works. You can see it coming, you know, because a lot of people, you know, there was three children, one 19-year-old. So they were in Southwest. They robbed a man, delivering pizza, took his money, took the pizza, and still shot him. And so we're talking about a 14-year-old, we're talking about a 15-year-old, we're talking about a 16-year-old, and a 19-year-old. Yeah, let that simmer for a minute. Two of them, they found the car a couple blocks away. And the other two they found that was inside of an abandoned house. And I'm telling you, you got to be kidding me. You guys, who do we hold accountable? If these are all African-American kids, who do we hold accountable? You know, who do we hold accountable? It's quick to say, okay, we're going to hold Democrats accountable, or we're going to hold the black community accountable, or we're going to hold. Now, I want to know who we hold accountable, because now all four of these children are going to be held accountable. They're going to get a public defender, and the next time you see them, it'll be behind 10 years, 5 years, 15 years, 20 years. Aggravated assault, simple assault, use assault with the use of a deadly weapon, attempted murder because you shot a person with a loaded gun. And so you guys have seemed to have embraced this abuse. You guys have seemed to embrace this stuff happening to your kids, to the ones who kids who look like you. And it's funny because you call on the other radio stations and you act like everything is okay. You act like it's hunky-dory, and you don't fight for anything. And then you fight somebody who looked just like you because he's telling you that you are not fighting enough. You think going down city council howling and screaming, that doesn't work. If you want to go down city council, run for city council. Get around a bunch of people. Let them show you how to do campaign financing. Let them show you how to raise money, and run for the office. Don't just think because you're going down there running. Everybody got this ego like they matter. You don't. You only matter collectively. Matter of fact, the people who are listening to me, my audience, the next time you call down the dial, ask them about a John Chen. J-O-H-N-C-H-E-N. Ask them. Say, excuse me, host, do you know a John Chen? Right. The one who is sitting at the table negotiating for that CBA. You guys are saying community-based agreement. I'm saying community-based annuity, because we're talking about $60 million he's asking for. By the time it's done, he's probably going to get $130 million. If John Chen gets $130 million for the Community Development Corporation in Chinatown, along with the buildings he already owned in Chinatown under the nonprofit, along with the 9-unit building that they just built that's supposed to be for low income, why don't you Democrat ask those questions right there? Call me up and ask me, who John Chen? How about that low income building, Prince? You know, what's going on with that building right there that we use the residents of the Philadelphia Housing Authority, since it's a tax credit, so they can live in this building right here? Ask me some particulars about that. Do your homework first. Stop calling thinking because everybody looks like you that you know what's going on in this city. You know what you see because you're not in those rooms. Be more than happy to talk to you about that. I want you to ask me a question like, who is getting the roundhouse at 8th and Race? We're just giving that building to somebody. should turn these into trivia questions. I should turn these into trivia questions because it's amazing how you think of yourself as being so important. It's amazing how you think of yourself as having the kind of status and having the kind of position that is so important. And yet still, these neighborhoods, nothing's getting done. Almost every abandoned and vacant lot has almost a new house put on it. And if it doesn't have a new house in your area, it's soon to have a new house. You can attribute that to the land bank. All the council persons have gotten donations from the people who have asked them if they could commandeer two or three lots, four lots, a whole block in their community. And so since you don't check the campaign finance report, since you're not astute and smart enough, since you don't ask no questions, since you go vote blindly and get embarrassed like you did this last election, and I know it's kind of harsh and you want to be mad at somebody. You could be mad at me all day long. You probably wouldn't be the first, probably wouldn't be the last. But I tell you what you're not going to do is go down and call them other stations and be so content and stupid at the same time. At least you have some knowledge that you know, because I gave it to you, because I know. You got to answer some questions, too. So when you call up here, I ask you a couple questions. Are you rolling or are you holding? Meaning, are you governing your own destiny or are you just passing it off to somebody else? So, you know, I ask you that question. It's probably one of the few questions I'm going to ask you opposed to the topic I'm talking about. Always remember, the whole hour I can talk, I got enough to say. I got enough anger in me. I got enough, I'm disappointed in ways that will allow me to speak to you and speak about my disappointment, because I got some questions, because I'm a little sick and tired of us walking around aimlessly like everything is okay. When you call up here today, I like to know what a stud is. I always thought a stud was in the category of a thoroughbred. I always thought, you know, when you're the best at what you do, if you're the best basketball player or football player, they say you are a stud. You are a thoroughbred. Now it's in relationship to a woman who wants to be a man, who can't produce, can't give. And I don't know where that went awry or where that went left at. I'm really not even trying to find the explanation for it. I want to know why the older people haven't corrected that. And I don't care what you say. Somebody can say, well, this is the young generation. I always know that when you come over certain people's houses, anybody under a certain age sit at the children's table. I think you'd have to be 20 years old or on your way to college or something to sit at the adults' table. There was always a children's table for those that were under 18. And so where would that stud, what category would they fit in? You know, help me out, because I'm seeing it in a couple races. But I'm not seeing it in the dominant race. I'm not seeing it in the successful race. I'm not seeing it in areas where people sit at the table and eat dinner together. I'm not seeing it at the table where people have making $200,000-$300,000 a year. I'm not seeing it there. And if you know better than I do, please explain it to me. Another thing, why are there gyms in some of the most depressed neighborhoods that are occupied with men and women? I'm talking about women who go online, Amazon, and buy the tights to fit them, too tight when they come to the gym, the one that's more cute than workout. And so if that is the distraction, I'm quite sure these women don't go to an all-women's gym and wear the same wardrobe. I'm so quite sure. And I'm upset because I would like them to go to an all-women's gym with the kind of wardrobe that they have on when you're in a gym with all men. And men have succumbed to that to the point where they're not working out. They're standing around. They're looking at the woman. You can't go talk to her because you're a minute away from sexual harassment. So if you got a good job and she feel harassed and they call the cops and stuff like that, then that's a problem. And so why even come to the gym that way? Why? So look, 15 minutes in, I'm going to take my first 2-minute break. I know you guys are out there listening to me. When you come back, we're going to have a, you're going to run over these topics, but I also have a few other things I want to ask you.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school,
not because he's a boy, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night,
not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat?
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover,
not for fun, just so he can have dinner?
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch,
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat?
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day, but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
Corey and Zach lingered in foster care for years, longing for a permanent place to call home. They lost hope.
I felt alone in the world. I didn't feel loved. Every day felt like a lost cause. I thought, who would want to adopt an older child?
I thought, I'm going to end up on the streets. That's just how it's going to be.
Thankfully, Corey and Zach's journey changed when they were adopted with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
It's really difficult to wonder how you're going to make it. I'm not going to have that problem now. I just won't. Because I have a family.
Today, Corey and Zach have bright futures. But every year, thousands of youth age out of foster care with no permanent family and no safety net. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting.
When the deal is done, you got to know when to hold them. Here we go with Kenny Rogers again. So look. Thank you guys once again for listening to me. It seems like I'm angry, but I'm a little, just a little upset because I think we are better as a city than we have allowed ourselves to. We've performed less. You know, you guys are excited about football teams, and yet you know people can't even afford box springs and mattresses and stuff like that. And so it's interesting how the rich can always sell you on being rich, but they can't get you out of being poor. Let me say that again. The rich can sell you on being rich, but they can't get you out of poverty or get you from being poor. It's just funny, you know. I was looking at something earlier today, and a person said, how many tests did you run before you put the product to market? They said we ran 9,000 tests. And he said, well, if how did 9,000 tests, all of them show that there is, there's no deviation. All of them were pretty much perfect. He said that never happens at all. She said, well, we were, had an option to either lose our shirts on this deal right here or to give them what they wanted to hear and support, have a politician support it so they don't investigate it. And so she said, you know how this worked. We pay the money and we test it into compliance. And I was like, wow. In reference to, and I'm a word guy, so I like to hear different words. And so they say test it into compliance. So rather it works, rather it kills people, rather it helps people, it doesn't really matter. If they want it to go to market, the more money they have, there's a term, test it into compliance. So maybe we only test 100 people and we didn't get the results we were looking for. So maybe we go to another place, another small town. Maybe it's Newark, maybe it's Trenton, maybe it's Philly, Chester, Camden, some urban place. And we test it again and we pay the people $100 to come get tested, or we pay the people $200 to come get tested. And since we're paying them and we know the social makeup of the people who we're paying, then we can get the favorable results. And when we get those favorable results, we then go ahead and move with those. Once we get the gold star, once everybody says it's good, you know, it was 100 people, it was okay, it's 2,000 people and it's good, then we go ahead and take it to market. Not to mention that if it kills 400 or 500 people, or if it hurts 400 or 500 people, then there's a whole litany of things that needs to take place before we remove it from market. And that was interesting. Test into compliance. Maybe you guys need to write that down. So I know you're listening out there to me. You're just not calling. I understand that, because sometimes it's kind of hard, because sometimes when you call, you want to have all the answers. It's hard when somebody's giving you the answers. You know, so test into compliance. That's pretty much what happened during COVID. Whereas it takes anywhere between 9 and 18 months for a trial in order to come up with a vaccine or a drug to cure a virus, you tested into compliance enough, and then you just gave people the vaccine. And so all of the stuff that you had made people succumb to for 2 years or 4 years seems to be null and void when you open up a border and let 8 million people in here who don't get vaccinated, who don't wear masks, who don't social distance, who don't do anything that you've made people who live in this country do forcefully. If you disagreed, if you didn't get vaccinated, you lost your job. You know, you had everybody from the janitor to the person at the bank or to the person at the dollar store tell you you need to step back in social distance and call the cops on you like they had a position of authority, making $8 an hour. And that's how you keep wanting to be treated. Another one is acceptable risk. And I didn't understand this until you start messing with the nonprofits. When you mess with nonprofits, there are certain acceptable risks. Because I was like, if somebody's robbing a bank and you make a phone call to the cops and you say, wait a minute, I see them, they're inside the bank right now robbing it. So my question is, why would they cut the siren on? Why would they come to the scene with the siren on? Does the siren give the person a chance to run? Or does the siren give the person a chance to let them know that you're coming? Mm-mm. The siren gives them notice that when they come and shoot you, or when they come and accost you, or when they come and get you, the siren is a precursor. And then the results after that is whatever it takes. Because there's a certain level of acceptable risk. And when you start looking at the map in certain communities and look at what happens in certain communities, and you keep asking yourself, well, why are these shootings happening in Southwest or in West or in Germantown, you know, and how come these crimes are not, it takes years for a mom to find out who killed her son, or for a father to find out who killed his daughter, you know, what level of acceptable risk? And where are those areas at that it is a term that says acceptable risk? And so opposed to calling up, because they say you're not reading no more, so you're not even picking up a book to read to see what's in it no more. So as best I can, I'm going to come with different terminologies. I'm going to talk slow so you can write it down. You can call me. The number is 888-329-3306. You don't have to. You can listen to me. Either way, I'm okay. But this acceptable risk is something that And I did hear this before, because I know certain Republicans would say, well, we're not going to get any votes out of that neighborhood, so it doesn't make sense to put money in that neighborhood. Or this pastor is at the table, but his congregation is all Democrat, so it's not going to benefit us to support him and his initiative. So we're not going to give him no turkeys. We're not going to give him no toys to give out to his congregation, you know. And so there's a degree of acceptable risk that we're faced with. And we need to really, at the end of the day, this is not meant to make you feel good. This is not, if you are stupid, this is not meant to make you feel better being stupid. If you choose not to investigate, if you choose not to get, you get what you inspect, not what you expect. I'm not here to make you feel comfortable. You got other radio stations that love to hear you talk, like to hear you mad at something. You know, it's interesting that some of the folks that were mad at Donald Trump, you know, they always say they don't have a pot to, and a window to throw it out. But you got a kente cloth on living in a house where your insulation is bad, your windows are letting air in like it's central air, and the roof needs to be fixed. And opposed to you being in that side of that situation, being mad at a politician, you should be asking whatever politician, if it's your roof, then you ask for some funds for the city. If it's your sidewalk, then you see if the state, when the state come out there and they're tearing up the streets and stuff like that, that they can perhaps get you a contractor to fix your sidewalk. But it just seems that you don't go to your politicians enough, and the pressure that you are encountering, you don't have the financial means. So you're patching up your life, and they letting you do it. And the only time you see them is when it's election time. You get these clowns up here at the city commissioner office that tells you about the voting process and stuff like that. And that's the case. If you're telling me about the process, then you shouldn't have a Black Lives Matter on. You shouldn't have anything matter on. Because it's not your job to dictate what side votes for who. You know, if Black folks are going to vote, they're going to vote. Obviously, we've seen it in this election that folks voted regardless of what the main media wanted. And so that was real good for us. And so, look, I know I got some people coming in, because I know I got some people that want to call in. I'm going to take another break for 2 minutes when we come back. And feel free to call. The number is 888-329-3306. WWDB, Life is a Gamble. Talk to you in 2 minutes.
When a child is diagnosed with cancer, the last thing parents should have to worry about is how to pay for it. This is a St. Jude moment.
Calvin got diagnosed June 10th of 2018. He has rhabdomyosarcoma sarcoma, a soft tissue cancer. One oncologist told us if it was my son, we'd go to St. Jude. And within 24 hours, we were on a plane headed here. It's hard to fathom what St. Jude has done for us. They've really given our family hope. For the donors out there, it's just amazing. I never thought we would be in this place. And it's people like you that help us and help St. Jude provide for a family like ours. St. Jude is like the gold at the end of a rainbow. And we are so grateful and thankful for everything.
Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Battles aren't won solely on the field. That's a common misconception. Battles are won within, over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. In that place where promises are kept. Promises to oneself.
This is a physical training event.
Promises to one's community.
Healthy people move debris out of their house.
Promises to one's country. In the heart of every Marine, you'll find a promise. A promise forever kept. A promise of battles won.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away.
Know when to run.
Know when to run.
Here we go. We're back. Once again, Miss Nancy out of West Philadelphia, she I went out there to deliver her a couple books that I've written. And she's 90 years old, and she's walking, and she's talking, and she is in the best shape ever. She called up here on the show, and she's been calling ever since. I think Andrea was on the show with me. And so when I went to her home, and I'm a landscaper, it's one of the companies that I have, I seen that the vines were growing all over the place, just all over her house, consuming her house in West Philadelphia where she is. And so when I had taken a look at that, I say, well, would you like me to assist you with that? And so I took a walk around the whole house, and I'd seen the landscape was just horrible, along with the sidewalk that was bucking, because the trees the roots were coming through the ground. And so it ached me to see what I had seen, along with the fact that she is not old enough in which to fix that problem. And so what I'm working on is something for the summer so we can use her place as a training place. And so if we could, I'm going to take some pictures. Those who want to come and learn how to take a tree down, those who want to come and learn how to de-weed a place and how we can help ourselves to get her place back in order, I will teach you guys. And you guys could learn from me. So, Miss Nancy, thank you. I know you're out there listening. Call in, because we would love to hear you on the radio. I don't know when your birthday is. I know you are 90, so from this point on, we like to celebrate you every day for your birthday, or every year for your birthday, or when a new year come in, we like to celebrate you, which leads me into a book I have in front of me called Aging Together, Uniting Generations and Minority Communities, written by yours truly, Melvin Prince Jonick. And last week I had this conversation about how folks are not working with folks generationally. And so maybe this book might lend you some expertise or lend you some ways on how we can either work together, or if we're not going to work together, how we can chalk it up. If you're not going to play in a sandbox with me, if every time you get in my sandbox, you're throwing my sand out, then you are not going to be allowed to come in my sandbox. So look, I have a few folks on the phone right now. Let's go to Miss Nancy, and then we'll go to Miss Mary. Miss Nancy. We're going to go to Miss Nancy.
Yes, peace, Prince.
Miss Nancy, how are you?
Talking about me.
Man, you 90 years old. Are you kidding me? I got to give you flowers while you still here. You know, you see me putting it out, letting people know that we're going to come there and work on taking them weeds off of that house and cut that grass down for you and move those trees and stuff like that. See, I already got you in the plan, so you can't go nowhere. You got to go into 2025 with me.
I hear you talking about me, friends.
How'd you enjoy your book?
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How you enjoy the book, though?
Well, I'm still reading the...
World Dominance?
The one. No. I'm still going back over the second one, reading about... they got laws that keep you in poverty. Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
How about Grandma's Spirit? How'd you love that book?
Oh, I'm very, very informative. Open up your mind. You know, I also this morning listened to, I forget the name of the show, but it was on this station talking about the Chinatown, how it would hurt communities and things and what happened. I had an uncle who had a It was a well-known barbershop in Baltimore. And when they was watching it. Anyway, when they built the stadium, it knocked all of them out. I know about that. I used to go drive down there after I leave work to visit my uncle. Well, he's deceased and gone now. But all those things.
But, Miss Nancy, let me just explain this to you. So the Chinatown situation is not displacing people. The Chinatown situation is Chinatown is asking for a community-based agreement. And so I call it a community-based annuity. Because you're asking for $60 million, which is going to probably wind up to being $130 million. Anytime a nonprofit gets $130 million, added with all of the properties and stuff that it has in its portfolio, that gives them the ability to borrow more money and tie in $100-something million. I don't care if it's over 10 years, over 20 years. It's just the fact that when we move some of these people out of public housing like we're doing now in Bartram Village, none of them at the table asking the developers for a community-based agreement.
And why is that?
That's exactly right. That's a good question. Because the representation of those people is a nonprofit. Public housing is a nonprofit who's supposed to be representing the best interests of those people, but yet you got the Chinatown Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit, asking for $60 to $130 million for its people.
Well, what's happening with us?
Good question. There you go. See, that's why I love you, Miss Nancy. That's a good question. See, we so busy being at the table treating hosts like movie stars and treating people who are on politicians like movie stars that they not even doing their job. You know what I mean? You got Anthony Williams out there. You got I don't know if that's Kendra Brooks, but you got Joanne McClendon out there. You got all these people. You got Vincent Hughes out there. You know, you got all these people out here that when you say their name, they try to find out what social group is he part of so we can ask him not to say our names and stuff like that. You know, all bets are off. When you run for office and you ask him for votes and you about to displace 400 people.
You know something, excuse me for cutting you off.
No, go ahead.
When I came up in the South, it didn't make no difference whether you were Baptist or AME in the community I come from or whatever church. If someone needed a roof, them men got together and put a roof on the house. The women got together, clean house. All my brothers and sisters, we was brought into this world by midwives.
Absolutely. And all the men knew a trade or was a part of doing the trade, right?
You had a trade.
Had to have a trade. Now, you willing, and check this out, Miss Nancy, and I'm going to give you the last word because I got Miss Mary on hold. You got these young boys out here who can't even change a tire on a vehicle. I seen this young couple down in South Philly. They had a flat tire, and they had a baby in the car.
Wow.
And it was the lady that was in the trunk looking for the spare, looking for the jack, And I pulled over, and I was like, well, my man, you don't know how to change the tire? He was like, no, dude. He's like, no. He's like, what do you call me? I think it was dude or something like that. It was just something. But me and my guys helped change that tire, and it was upsetting the fact that these I can't even call them men out here. These boys out here never become men, never know how to put a wall up in the house, never know how to put stucco on the wall, how to seal the basement and stuff like that. And so, you know, we blaming some people. Some people got to get the blame for this right here. And then we got to, you know, once we blame them, then we got to, you know, give them a hug and then get them back on the right track because they shouldn't have to learn these trades in prison.
No, that's true, too, because they shouldn't have never taken out the schools here they had like we have in the South. You know, they work on cars, build furniture, home economics for the young people.
Mm-hmm.
All that was when my children went to school here. What happened? What gets to me, Prince, I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that these people that's in office and not in office or wherever they are, they came up here in Philadelphia, everything that has been taken away from children now, they had it in school. We had gym classes. You had art and music, financial and cooking, men building cars and things, all divers and stuff. Mm. Well, they, all that way. And what are the expect for the children? Talk about children overweight. Well, what gym classes is what they need.
Everybody had to climb that rope in gym class. In order for you, everybody had to climb up that rope and hit that bell in gym class. Everybody. Nobody was precluded from that. And you got these kids running around. So, Miss Nancy, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to talk to Miss Mary. Now, hold up. I got to ask you a question. Are you rolling the dice this week or are you passing them?
No, I'm rolling them. And a stud is a horse.
Exactly. Hold up, Miss Nancy. Hold up. Don't go nowhere. Don't go nowhere. I thought a stud was a thoroughbred, too. I put it in the category of a horse, which is the best horse, which is a thoroughbred. Not no woman who don't want to have no kids and can't make no kids. I don't understand where that terminology come from. So look, Miss Nancy, I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
I listen. All right. Do we got Miss Mary on the line? Miss Mary.
Yes. Good afternoon, Prince.
Oh, man. Good afternoon. So tell me what a stud is, Miss Mary, because I thought it was a horse, a thoroughbred. You know, I never perceive it to be no young lady walking around that don't want to have no baby and can't make no baby.
Well, some people have problems, Prince. You know, you know, not everybody can have a child. But then I look at the people that, all these children that are out there that need homes. You know, just because you bear a child don't mean that you cannot take care of somebody else's child.
That is correct.
You know, and I've always looked at it that way. You know, and it takes a lot to raise a child. And I'm looking at what's going on with those young men that robbed the pizza delivery guy.
Yeah, when that's, let me give you the ages again, Miss Mary. 14, 15, 16, and 19. They caught off four of them.
And you know what? And every last one of them dropped out of school. I bet you. Any amount of money.
They ain't
got to
worry about school no more. Hard knocks for the next 20 years.
Exactly. You know, and we have to start looking at, we did more with less. Now, Miss Nancy's generation, I could listen to her all day long. My generation came after Miss Nancy's generation. That was my parents' generation that was involved with the civil rights with Martin Luther King, which my father never followed Martin Luther King because he did not believe in turning the other cheek.
I know that's, you know, right. I like your dad already.
He always told us that you turn the other cheek, you stand up there and get the hell beat out of you. So and I grew up with that mentality.
Miss Mary,
you know,
so if we ever came home from school and somebody chased us home from school, I had the kind of parents that would lock the door and said, if you lose and come in here, you'll get another beating. So we was fighting, you know, people who had real understanding not to chase us home school, not to get in front of our door, because, you know, you got to fight for something in this world. I just don't know about that turning the other cheek stuff. But let me ask you a question. Are you familiar with a person named John Chen?
No, and I'm going to ask you about him, but I want to go over that these nonprofits that we have, these anti-violent groups out there. You know, when Solomon Jones came on the air, he told people to come to community college.
I remember. I think I went down there too. I think I heed the call, and a bunch of other guys heed the call. But that was not his nonprofit. I talked to a guy that's doing life in prison, whose daughter introduced me to him, who created that nonprofit. That's where it started from. Started from the prison.
Yeah, but it was for his group to sign up people. Because I think they said they had over 400 people that showed up. Now you're looking at, he set up his own nonprofit. And he was supposed to provide the resources to these other organizations. And I've always said, if you don't have your thing together as a nonprofit, then why would you be turning to somebody else to give relay your information to?
Because he can camouflage and hide behind that, and he can get the dollars. I'm working with someone in the immediate future who are going to create a nonprofit to do something for starting with young ladies in the trades and stuff like that. And everything that she is going to set up, no one's doing it right now. So that means that when she does it, you know, the state can give her clean dollars, because once they find out that you are replicating somebody else's program or you stole somebody else's program, then they'll get you for, my mom would say, get you for the old and the new, the old money you took and the new money that you was trying to get.
Would you have to look at it? Over 400 anti-violent groups out there, and they have no idea the children that have dropped out of school. They don't even look for these children. And you go into the school system going to mentor only 2 hours a week. Tell me, you don't even know the
so
children's
we can get rid of
name
program.
At
don't,
that
don't,
point.
Don't worry, Ms. Mary. You know, the Republicans are going to do an audit on all these programs, going to get rid of most of them, going to probably lock up people. I tell you, one of the things that sitting with the state Republicans, that they're going to all of caretaker programs where they make $1,200 a week and give $400 to the person that they're taking care of, almost like the PPL money, you're going to start seeing come the new year, you're going to start seeing an audit and investigation on all these places. Because, see, if we ask you a question, are you taking $400 out of the $1,200, and you say no, then you've lied. If we ask you the question and you say yes, you know, then one of the two folks are going to get locked up, if not both of them. And I'm telling you, it's going to be a surge for all of these care providers who are willingly and knowing that the person is breaking off the person that they are taking care of. I try to tell you, we don't mind overcrowding the prison. Miss Mary, don't go anywhere. I want you to remain here with me. I'm going to take a two-minute break and come back, and you and I are going to talk the rest of the show, okay?
Okay.
Here's an important message for everyone who drives a motor vehicle. Every day, an average of 2 emergency responders are struck by vehicles while working on the road. Some don't survive. Others are critically injured and can no longer perform their life-saving jobs. In 2019, 44 emergency responders were struck and killed while working to help others on the road. Sadly, it looks like that number will be even higher in 2020. Firefighters, police officers, paramedics, tow truck operators, and every responder needs your help, and they need it now. Do your part to keep everyone safe on the road. When you see flashing lights of any color on the road ahead of you, slow down, move over, and give them room to work. It's the law in Pennsylvania. Police are cracking down, and penalties for violators are on the rise. This message is brought to you by PennTime and the Beasley Media Group. Learn more about Pennsylvania Traffic Incident Management at PennTime.com.
Between business life, social life, and her best bud, Loki, Beverly has a lot to focus on, especially while fighting Stargardt, a blinding retinal disease that starts during childhood and gets worse over time. But despite her vision loss, she's hopeful because she knows she's not fighting alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding diseases, providing real hope to those fighting vision loss. And our nationwide community of local chapters provides networking and support for people with vision loss, as well as their loved ones. Because the best way to fight against blinding diseases is to fight together. And for Beverly, winning the fight means focusing on what's closest to her. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Learn more about how you can help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting.
When the deal
when the
is done. Miss Mary. All right, Miss Mary, you know you're on as my co-host.
Well, I have a lot to discuss. Let's do it.
We got 5 minutes to do it, and come on.
Okay, I'm looking at Controller Brady's report with these buildings that were issued to primarily nonprofits in the city. I mean, you get to have used taxpayers' dollars to renovate the building and to list it as your own private property. You know, this is all a scam here.
And borrow the money off the assets. So you can go to the bank and borrow off of a building that you have that's standing that we've given to you. It's no different than the dollar house. Remember, we used to give houses away from the dollar and people go get a mortgage put on them for like $40,000, $50,000?
And that's what they arrested Sheriff Green based on those dollar homes that he was given to his friends, his family, his relatives. Never traced the money. And we had Mayor Nutter at the time sue not only Sheriff Green, but the developers that actually took the money from taxpayers, $15 million. And we never found out what happened to the $15 million that Mayor Nutter filed a lawsuit supposedly in our behalf as taxpayers.
I remember what you said last week. Remember what you said last week? Our politicians don't mind going to jail. Remember saying that?
No, they don't mind going to jail, but I'm looking at we have people in place that are required to claw back that money.
Exactly.
And we had a Republican U.S. attorney, McSwain. He prosecuted Sheriff Green. But then I looked on the system, saw nothing about what happened to the money, what happened to the money that Mayor Nutter.
So I was in a room with McSwain, and I think McSwain was one of those prosecutors that was going after Johnny Dodd. Am I right? Because I know that he was hanging his hat on that when he was running for, I want to say attorney general. He was running for something statewide, and he came here to the Republican House in Frankfurt, and one of his claims to fame was that he went after the electrical union guy, John Doherty. And so you got Republicans that, you know, they don't really like Philadelphia throughout the state.
Oh, I know that for a fact, because I talked to quite a few of them when I was working with the state. You know, the majority of the FBI agents were Republicans, believe it or not.
Absolutely.
You know, because I had to deal with them. I had to talk to them. And we basically had the same mindset that we don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, or independent. If you violated the law, cheated me, because I pay taxes too, and they paid taxes, we went after you no matter what. It was no excuse about, oh, I don't have receipts. That gives us more ammunition to prosecute you
on.
Here in Philadelphia,
Ms. Mary,
they just do anything they want here.
How do you run and operate a business and then you tell me that you don't have any receipts or you don't have any paperwork or you don't have any anything that's traceable? Tell me how that works, Ms. Mary. Help me out.
The Philadelphia Inquirer did several segments on these nonprofits, anti-violent groups. They didn't even have buildings to actually to discuss anything with people that had committed crimes, to even mentor them. So how was that? And you allow this to go on, you know? And with this system now that we have in place, you can scan the receipt on your iPhone. There's no excuse now. You know, but yet, they call this Philadelphia law, and we have chapters on file, Philadelphia laws. That means that it's corrupt. You can look up any law that anyone questioned throughout the country, it's listed under Philadelphia law. This is where they laughing at us, because they allowed the district attorneys, the court system, the prosecutors did absolutely nothing and allow this city to basically go bankrupt because we're looking at going bankrupt. We owe so much money. the city of Philadelphia does, but yet we're going to give a stadium to the 76ers.
Right.
And we're already giving them a subsidy anyway.
Ms. Mary,
all these teams, stadiums, everything.
You are so correct. I'm out of town. I'm going to get you on here early next Monday. You call me. You call at the beginning of the show. We on for the whole show. Doesn't really matter to me. So my question to you, are we rolling them or are we passing them?
Always rolling them.
Thank you, Ms. Mary.
They're going to continue to roll them.
Have a great rest of the week. I'll talk with you next Monday. I'm out.
There's no exception to